Baby, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hand him on now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
This is Joseph Gallivan with Art Focus on KBOO Portland. This week I'm talking about Design Week Portland, which is all this week. My first guest is Abibat Durasimi of the Bloom Beauty Collective. Thanks for doing Art Focus, Abibat.
Thank you so much for having me, Joseph. I'm excited.
Yeah, as part of Design Week Portland on Friday the 7th at 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., you're doing what sounds like you're showing a documentary about the beauty scene with seven individuals. Try and explain what that is, the new norm in fashion. It's a free event online.
The new norm in fashion is August 7th. What we're planning to do is do an amazing soft launch through Zoom, where we'll have seven of our panelists that is a part of the doc. We'll have a discussion, and we'll be able to launch our first video regarding about the new norm of fashion. And then we'll have a Q&A. The new norm around what style is now and what's going to be in the future and what sustainability functionality means, and you know, also to get to know the people behind the scenes in the industry.
So you're one of the things you're interested in is you everyone pigeonholes you as only working with African-American people, you know, for hair and skin and that, whereas you take a broader skills. You could work in any, you know, with anyone. So how are you trying to get the word out for people like yourself, that they're more broadly employable?
Yes. With me having my background, working apart from having my own salon, doing freelance work, I've noticed that I was the only person of color in the scene. And if there was, it's just, you know, far few in between. And my goal of Bloom Beauty Collective was to highlight people of color who are creative entrepreneurs that are able to have a platform to be seen and to be known for their work. So now, with everything that has changed, Bloom being a event production company has now become more of a content media production and agency.
So, well, what's the typical thing? You would get a call from Wieden & Kennedy or Nike or someone, you know, some agency to do a specific thing. But other people, like maybe younger people who just work in a salon or a barbershop, would never get that call.
Right. Exactly. I think, you know, for me, I was blessed to meet the right people in my chair and utilize the resources they were willing to give me. And the funny thing about it is, you know, the people that I meet so happens to work at Kennedy, Wieden & Kennedy or Nike. And it's normally by word of mouth. And it's just with me having over 20 years of experience and being in that realm, I've been able to be called on. And there's times though where I'm not able to make it, and then I have to find someone else to take over. And I would rather have somebody that would look like me to be able to fill that position.
So Abibat, which do you think has more effect on your professional life this year in 2020? Was it COVID-19 or Black Lives Matter?
Both, actually. One thing about COVID had gave me a chance to stay still and see exactly what my businesses look like, you know, having to be able to pivot in a way to make that transition and becoming a event production to now turning into more virtual production, so a media productions. And to be honest with you, it gave me some time to create that narrative and content to talk about people of color and where they fit in the industry. So in a way, I see this as a silver lining, because after BLM, once BLM came up for the whole world to see, yeah, a lot of people have an understanding of what Black people have gone through and what is it so hard to be in the corporate industry. And that's where Bloom wanted to create that narrative. It was just highlight people who don't get seen and get recognized for their work. So now with BLM happening, now there's a lot of doors that is opening up for us And I want to be there to make sure that our next generation is able to go through those doors and make things, you know, and make things happen within that industry.
So, yeah, you see all over the corporate media, I mean, like Instagram for corporations, how they're right behind BLM and they're promised to hire more black people and all that. Is that, mm-hmm. is that true? Do you see that happening?
I'm hoping that is true. I know there's a lot of companies that do have diversity and inclusive, you know, departments, and definitely, you know, there's some that are not behind BLM, and that's totally understandable. Everybody has their choice. But at the same time, you know, it's great to have an opportunity where you don't feel like you're going to be judged or, you know, or if anything, jaded, you know, for being in that position, and then also getting paid for what you're worth. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely, you know, do see that silver lining. I do hope that, you know, change is coming. And right now people are holding that conversation and actually, you know, keeping these companies accountable. And, you know, and the only way that we do that is to, you know, make sure that everybody is heard and, you know, and then also give them a way for them to find us, you know, because not a lot of corporations don't have a good balance of culture in their world, right? And now, you know, there's a way where we're able to have those open doors there for us to go right through it.
Thank you so much, Abiba, and good luck with the collective.
Thank you so much, Joseph. I appreciate your time.
This is Joseph Galavan with our focus on KBOOK. I'm here talking to Fran Bitakis. She's the founder of DupeDupe Creative, a radical creative agency. Thanks for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Fran.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
You have an event. It's an all-virtual event on Friday, the 7th of August. And it's from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. sliding scale. It's an all-virtual event, and it's about collaboration. Could you just tell us who will be there and what you'll be talking about?
Yeah. So The Art of the Collab is an event that I've been working on with my friend Christelle Brinshot, who does this really amazing project with their sister called Hey Sis World. And yeah, we've been collaborating on different projects. We've worked with Fabi Reyna from She Shreds Media and have worked, yeah, on different ideas and different projects. And finally, something is kind of coming together for Design Week Portland called The Art of the Collab. And the reason why we're doing this is because we all understand with each other in the conversations that we've had that we each bring a very, very specific point of view and have a very community-driven way of working together. And knowing that, like, each of our skill sets are really strong in our own ways, but that when we're able to pull our resources together and collaborate, that the things that we do will be even more potent for our community. And yeah, so we decided to pull together a panel of five really, really amazing creative folks in this town, all women of color, and yeah, bringing a space together where all of us can discuss what that looks like to be able to share the work, share the resources, share the networks to be able to really make work together that will stand up above and beyond work that you typically see coming out of a creative agency, especially in Portland, because it's very, very community focused.
Yeah. So what would you say if you had a writer with a great idea who's looking for a graphic designer or a videographer, where would they go? What are the pitfalls of trying to collaborate with strangers?
Well, I think, that is a good point. It's really difficult to just collaborate with anyone, right? Like, you really want to be able to feel that you have a connection with that person. So, for example, when I first started DupeDupe, Christelle just reached out to me because she had just moved here. And my Instagram caught her eye, and she just reached out and said, hey, would you love to meet up for coffee? And so, yeah, I was like, yes, of course. Went and had coffee with her, and within the first, 30 minutes of us hanging out right away, felt a really strong connection, felt really great chemistry. We were able to talk to each other about all kinds of things very openly and being very vulnerable with each other. And we kind of just, built upon that that first meeting and just kept staying in touch and then just kept meeting up and kept talking. And for me, I'm not really into forcing a collaboration or forcing a collaboration just for, you know, social capital or social clout. For me, all the work that I do in the collaborations that I make, those connections that I make with people have to be really genuine. I personally feel like I have to build somewhat of a foundation with those folks before I can actually collaborate with them. So I actually put in a lot of time before I do anything with anyone.
How does that work now in a time where people won't go and meet strangers for coffee?
You know, there's a lot of Zoom meetings. You know, I'm probably in a Zoom meeting or a Google Meets, sometimes 10 a day. You know, everybody wants their hour to be able to talk and to really, get their ideas across and build that relationship. But yeah, it's challenging. You know, meeting in real life is really... is much, much more potent than obviously meeting in a virtual space. So it has been a little bit challenging, but I will say in the advent of, taking advantage of parks too now is a thing that we're doing. So I'm trying to meet up with people, out in nature and just doing it that way too. So that's really helpful.
Mm-hmm. So this event you're doing on Friday virtually, what was the origin of it? You were going to meet in a really nice space, limited numbers, right? First.
Correct. Yeah. We were going to meet over at a space that was going to be provided by Living Room Realty. They just have a new space over in Inner Southeast, a gorgeous meeting space with lots of plants and tall ceilings and the whole thing. And we wanted to keep it small, about 30 people, so that we could really have a chance to get really vulnerable and talk about some real things. And doing that in a smaller group is really, really helpful. But now with COVID and everything moving over to an online space, you know, we want to be able to still have that intimacy and have that vulnerability and have that safe space for folks. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that'll all play out. But I'm pretty sure that once people kind of see the vibe and kind of who we are when we introduce ourselves and let people know what we're up to and why we're having this conversation about collaboration, I think people will be able to hopefully feel just as home as they would if we met in real life.
Mm-hmm. Are you hoping it'll be mostly Portland people, or are you opening it to the whole country?
You know, that's a good question. I feel like it would absolutely apply to anyone. You know, both Christelle and I have collaborate with folks that don't live here either. I think because the BIPOC community, especially the BIPOC creative community in Portland, is such a small percentage, and you know, we really would love to kind of connect with those folks. But I believe that since it's a Zoom, it's probably open to anyone to be able to come if they're able, to pay the sliding scale fee that we've got set up so that it is really accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say that, you know, if there are any BIPOC creatives out there who feel like they haven't really been able to find their community, I would love for you to reach out to me via Instagram and hit me up so that we can get you in the fold and get you meeting other BIPOC creatives so that we can really build a strong community, because I believe that, especially in Portland, that, you know, our voices are really important, especially during this moment, and being able to give those BIPOC creatives a platform to be able to say what they need to say and give them access to the networks that I have and to the gear that I have, and really being able to share those resources so that they're able to make work, especially during this time, I think is going to be incredibly powerful.
What's the Instagram?
It is at Joop Joop, which is JOOP.creative.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focused on KBOO Portland. I've been talking to Fran Bitakis. She's the founder of Joop Creative, and her event for Design Week Portland is Friday, August 7th, 5 to 7:30 p.m. Virtual. Yeah. Thanks very much, Fran.
Thank you.
This is Joseph Gallivan with Art Focus on KBO Portland. This week, I'm talking to people about Design Week Portland. I'm here talking to Nick Lee via Zoom. Nick, tell us a bit about your sign painting studio, what it's called, and then what are you going to be teaching during Design Week Portland?
Sure. Yeah. The full name is Studio Signs and Pictorial Displays Incorporated. Nowadays, we have a DBA, a Studio Sign Company, Studio Sign Co. But the full original name includes pictorial displays, which were big billboards. So when our company started in 1963, the founder was a billboard painter. And then from there, went on to painting wall signs and trucks and doing all sorts of lettering on wood and windows and basically all types of sign painting. So now we continue that tradition and we do traditional hand-painted signs. And in our workshop, we're going to be covering the basic sign painter styles of block lettering and casual lettering.
Mm-hmm. What is block lettering and what is casual lettering?
So block lettering, also known as Gothic lettering or Egyptian lettering, is basically sans serif lettering, which means there are no serifs like you would see on a Roman letter. So these are just block letters. A very well-known one is Helvetica or Arial, most people have on their computer. Those are types of block letters. But there's a traditional sign painter's block letter that was developed around the 40s and was widely used after the war. And that's the style that we're carrying on and going to focus on.
Mm-hmm. What's it called exactly?
Block lettering.
Oh, that was what was developed in the 40s.
Yeah, yeah. It'd been around a long time before that. You know, in the 1900s, even before that, they were using it. But right around the, you know, World War II time is when it really took off and a lot of sign painters were using that style. As well as the other style we're going to teach, which is called casual. And this is what most people think of when they think of a sign painter's. Looks like it's come right off the brush, very casual, which is different than the technical of block lettering. So we're going to start with the technical block lettering to teach brush control. And then after that, they can develop a little more looseness and swing with the casual.
Mm-hmm. Just tell us, what day is this? And presumably this, because of COVID, this is all distance learning. You'll be sitting in front of your computer to do this.
Right, right. So normally we host it in our studio, and we have a lot of signs and gold leaf and stuff around that's very inspirational. But yes, as you said, now with COVID, we have to do it via Zoom. So this will be our first virtual workshop. But we've set up some things. We've developed a workbook PDF that we're going to have available for our students to download when they join, so they can have references and exemplars, which are basically reference alphabets that we've painted, so the students can have something to work from.
When you talk to digital natives about what you do, it sounds like what you do is rooted in the analog world. What kind of questions do they ask?
Taking the workshop and understanding how the brush moves will really, really help with designing in lettering.
Mm-hmm. But are you saying if they learn to do it with a brush and paint, then they can simulate it on a computer later?
Yeah, you know, really it's all about studying and understanding letter forms. And that's, you know, that's really important because the letter styles that were developed by the Romans haven't changed too much over the years. And so subconsciously, most people know what letters are generally supposed to look like. Granted, there are variations, but the students really, when they take the workshop and we paint the alphabet, you're forced to be intimate with the letters and really understand the letter forms. And then that will inform your design in the future when you go to the computer. And like I said, especially if you're taking a font or something like that, you can skew it and change it to have a better look and feel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And then briefly, you know, where does this fit into the kind of design ecosystem in Portland? I remember the guy used to drive around in a clown car.
Yeah, Scott Campbell. Yeah, yeah, he's a great window painter.
He was known for painting on glass. He did big signs all over. You know, then there's Trader Joe's with their chalk signs that they rub out every few weeks. Where would sign painting fit into Portland? Where would we see good examples?
The type of sign painting that we do is a bit different than that. The stuff they do at Trader Joe's would be more like what used to be called show card writing. And that would be back when they had big show windows on the main street and the show card writers would write what they offer, the price or something like that, quick lettering. And then window splashes or window painting on the glass is another kind of offshoot. And these things are more temporary, so they're done a little bit quicker. And so oftentimes you'll see the casual style or script style done there. But for us, we do more like signboards. So one of our main clients is McMiniman's, and we do a lot of hand-painted signs for them, which are very colorful, beautiful layouts with nice colors. And these are done in sign painting enamel, which is what we use, and that's meant to last. So these signs, they go out 10, 15, 20 years sometimes. Mm-hmm. So they're meant to last. But the same techniques for lettering are used all across the board. You know, a lot of people now are painting yard signs or protest signs. So you can use these skills for something like that. Because, like I said, proper lettering and letter form and structure is going to get the point across better with a certain sense, you know, and more influential.
The protests have thrown up a lot of quickie cardboard, Sharpie, you know, capital letters, signs. What do you see when you look out over a sea of signs at a protest?
I see a lot of good signs and a lot of bad signs as far as design is concerned. And I have a lot of sign painter friends on my Instagram who have been painting some beautiful protest signs. And again, it just comes back to proper lettering and letter forms. If you're going to spend the time to make a protest sign, it should be legible and readable, and then more effective.
Your Instagram is @studiosignco, correct?
Correct.
This is Joseph Gallivan for Art Focus on KBOO Portland. I've been talking to Nick Lee of Studio Sign, and he was talking about Design Week Portland and the workshop he'll be running on Wednesday. Thanks very much, Nick.
Thanks so much, Joseph.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. I'm talking about Design Week Portland this week, which runs 3rd through 5th of August. And I'm here talking to Alex Chu, public muralist, via Zoom. Thanks for doing the interview, Alex.
No, thanks for having me.
So you're doing a panel discussion on Monday the 3rd, which will be available to everyone to find online and, you know, later listen to. And it's about making zines. So you're a public muralist. So what's the connection? Why are you talking about zines?
Well, I got into art through zines. It was a way of me being able to distribute my own work. So a lot of my background comes from illustration and cartooning. And I made a lot of zines and comics when I started doing art. So I guess I'm connected to that community. And that's sort of why the city reached out to me to help with this project.
So what? Just briefly, who's on the panel and why? What are they talking about? Civic life presented in a zine form. You know, what's the story?
So this is a project that was organized by the Department of Civic Life for the city. And it basically just introduces basic ways to get involved with local government, and also kind of describes the function of it and how it works and how people can engage in simple ways. Mm-hmm. So they just wanted to kind of share that so that people will build interest in getting involved. And we're doing it by publishing a little mini zine. So we put all the information together and illustrations, and it's in a format that's going to be printed and distributed, but there's also a PDF where you could digitally download it and print copies yourself if you want to.
Oh, so it's a zine about zines.
It's a zine about public engagement, like engaging in government. So that's the content of it.
Okay. The content is about Portland's commission form of government, right? Which is why we have a mayor who's head of a bureau, and the commissioners are not, you know, geographically based, which you got to admit, it's kind of a boring subject. We go over it all the time. As you get older, it gets more interesting, but it's kind of boring. So is the idea to present something that abstract and dry in an interesting way?
Yeah, that's definitely the goal.
Now you yourself, kind of known as a muralist, tell us a couple of murals that you've done that people can go and look at when they're out and about in Portland.
Yeah, this is actually more recent of a development. I mean, I've been doing murals for probably about 10 years on and off, but it wasn't my main focus. And it became a focus when I was when I applied to a project for TriMet. So that is one very public project that I've done. It's on the 82nd Avenue MAC stop on the Blue Line. And I think you can see part of it from the 84 freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And the one you can see from the freeway is a group of children playing with bubbles and interacting with one another. And then there's also scenes at the top. And the idea was just to build a narrative. Well, I was watching my daughter full time. She was 2 years old at the time. So it kind of tells a story of a day in the life of my daughter and how she interacts with the community and how the community is there to teach her things and share their skills with her. So it's just a sort of like a narrative of being involved with the community and getting support from the community.
Mm-hmm. It is a beautiful mural, and it's painted on kind of stucco, I think, which deep grooves in it. So it must have been really difficult.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy surface to work on. But what's interesting is that it was one of my first major public art pieces, and everything was a learning process. So at that point, I didn't even know what was difficult and what was easy, but definitely in retrospect, that was one of the most difficult surfaces I had to work with and environments that I had to work with.
So when you do a mural, are there easy ways to do it now? Can you just bang it out on your laptop and then project it and go over it? So tell us about how you make it.
Okay. So I have worked very hard to become efficient with producing my work. So everything that you talked about, like Photoshop and projection and all those kinds of tricks, I try to, you know, at least experiment with them, because my goal is to try to produce a product fairly quickly, but something with high quality. But, you know, even when I started, I feel like things took me a long time. That TriMet project took me 2 months to paint, but I think I'm getting faster as I go. So I try to experiment. I mean, there's new techniques that people use for scale. So there's gridding. So I do gridding with chalk lines, and some people do this style of gridding where you can actually superimpose the wall with the image that you're going to do, and they'll just doodle on the wall, and it's called a doodle grid. And then you can kind of keep perspectives by looking at where your doodles are in comparison to the image that you want to paint.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. I was talking to Alex Chu, public muralist, and he was talking about zines and civic engagements and the life of a muralist. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Alex.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week talking about Design Week Portland were Nick Lee, Alex Chu, Fran Bitikas, and Abhimat Durosimi.
Tie him up when he's fast asleep. Send him on a pleasant cruise. When you wake up on the sea, or to think of me and you, to think about paint and to think about glue. What a jolly boring thing to do. Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on.